But I'm really glad that I'm second-minded in the seat, because then I don't have to cover as many background as the previous talk. But still, I will quickly go through a few simple things to just cover the background. So this is the outline of the talk. I'm actually most interested to explain some of our recent work on these two outline, these two topics. But because they are related to the previous work, so I have to cover some background. One of the topics is the spin orbital correlation in the system. And I would tell you a little bit more about the unpublished work that we are just about to submit, how the itinerant electron modify the mechanism of the system in a very different way than what you usually think about in the itinerant system. And I will also very briefly touch base on the glycine scale solution, which was very thoroughly covered only previously. I will just use the first principle method to demonstrate two topics, and particularly to focus on the pain structure. And then I won't be able to talk about the disorder, and so I'm pretty sure I won't run out of time, so I will just maybe show a slide of a reference where you can find some more result on this.
Wait, what are disordered impurities?
Disordered impurities. You mean impurities are by definition disordered?
Yes. Yeah.
Not necessarily.
We're all impurities. They're the
common elements, right?
Yeah. For example, iron vacancy can be ordered. Sodium in circulation can be ordered in this common order. Yeah. All right. So. This is my former group members, and now all of them are gone. So, and then the one I will talk about, I will talk about more is Zhao Hui's work, a student that graduated, and Tao did a disorder, and Wei Guo, and I work on it. And Qi Chen worked on the magnetic correlation, orbital correlation. And in collaboration, Hirschfield and Chen worked with us on the disorder problem. And this is the result I will focus more today on, published result, working with SYSU in China, and particularly with the student Ken. So this one I'll go very quickly, because I talked about this last time, a few years ago here. So this is the ion-based one. When you order the parent compound, you get this correlation that spins the anti-ferromagnetic aligned in this direction and fairly aligned in this direction. So this is the C-type anti-ferromagnetic order. And accompanying with this usually is at higher temperature, a stronger order is a lattice. Lattice will order, and this becomes a shorter bond, this becomes a longer bond. Okay? So from a density functional theory point of view, you want to understand the local symmetry. You can construct a Bonnier function associated with the D-band, the hybridized with the arsenic. And then you find that locally you have the structure, which, because this is a tetrahedron, it has a structure of X and Y being degenerate. But to be honest, these are almost all degenerate. They are very close in H anyway. But this one always degenerate. This is decayed by the symmetry. And when that happens, you have to be a little bit aware that the system might have intrinsic instability in the orbital channel, right? Because degeneracy is always not good. It generates entropy, right? You don't want it, especially when you go to the whole dimension. Now, when you go to a lower energy scale, so let's say you go from normal state to a zero temperature, a broken Smith state, the system will automatically go into a broken Smith state, and you will find that it orders magnetically, and you open gaps. There are several things that happen in the density functional theory calculation. One, you realize that the XZ and YZ, which I show you being degenerate in the normal state, now are no longer symmetric. In fact, you will see that the blue one, which is the XZ orbital, seems to be barely affected by this opening of the gap. It basically does not couple very strongly to the order parameter, while the YZ, which is the red one, open big gaps everywhere. So this is telling you several things. One, the degeneracy between the orbitals are broken, so the orbitals are now polarized. Symmetry is broken. Second of all, locally. Second of all, the energy scale of this gap is very large in this DFT calculation. This is of order of the bandwidth. Not quite, but of order, I say half of bandwidth. It's huge. All right? And the associated with that is a very large local moment. Very large. 3-point-something per megaton. So all this is telling you, from DLT point of view, is telling you, if the system were not fluctuating very seriously, quantum mechanically, you would be a very strongly ordered system with large moment, and the system would be very, very much ordered. In fact, if you look carefully about this structure, you find that not only did they order magnetically, as I said, the symmetry between these two are broken. And if you look carefully, you'll find they are fairly orbitally ordered. So one can further analyze the Hopping parameter and see how things couple. If you think about this as a semi, it's a semi-metal, which means it's a semiconductor with a negative gap, right? So the easy way to think about the problem is to assume this is almost insulator stuff with, then spontaneously it generates particle and holes in the system, a small number of particle holes. So you can start by thinking of some kind of the itinerancy comes from this spontaneous generation of particle and hole, which means you can start by thinking of the background of insulating background before you deposit the particle and hole at the same time, right? And then in the insulating point of view, you can see that the coupling of the YZ is in this direction rather than in this direction. And this is because the YZ actually has a hidden PX symmetry. So I can explain this to you prior. Anyway, so the Hopping is this way and this way. This is very strange, but this is what the symmetry will dictate. And that means a simple picture of the, if you like to think about strongly correlated local picture, this is the correlation of the material. The system, the YZ orbital want to couple to these two YZ orbital. So the best way to utilize super exchange energy is to put the one additional electron in the XZ such that you empty the YZ to be available for virtual processes. And you want them to be anti-magnetic so you can go back and forth, right? So the correlation of the system, dominant correlation system, is like this. You must have a ferro-orbital correlation accompanied with anti-ferro-magnetic correlation. This is the basic building block of the system. As soon as you put into this kind of correlation, even in mean field sense, as long as you have this structure in your bound, DFT gives you very excellent energy scale in everything, phonons and everything. If you go to a normal state, when you dope the system, and you say, well, I don't have this anymore, I just have a mean field, normal state, no order parameter, you wipe out this correlation, you will get terrible phonon frequency. So even in the normal state, the phonon frequency, the boundings, are still this kind. So it's very easy from DFT calculation to see that even in the supermanian state, locally, this is the correlation, they're going to survive. And they're going to survive at high temperature, above the changing temperature of the structure and many order as well. Because I want to show you, the order parameter is very large. That implies that the effective coupling constant between the order are very large. The local moments are coupled very strongly with each other. It does not reflect the low changing temperature, 150K. That doesn't tell you the strength of the interaction. You don't look at the interaction strength, you look at the paramagnon or the paraorbit, you see the bandwidth, right? And the DFT calculator will tell you that this bandwidth is going to be very big. So this system, from here, you can see the system is a system with a very large local correlation, but at the same time, weaker, relatively weaker order. So half the story is in how these things fluctuate. This is the physics, okay? Now, so I'm going to tell you a little quick, but we also know in this class of material, there are many families. They all look almost identical. If you look at the Fermi surface, they're almost identical. But they have very different magnetic order. And this is, to me, a very strong indication that a purely itinerant picture will have difficulty. So we can show that, in fact, we also know from experimental measurement that the system has very large local moment using a fast probe and relatively smaller order moment. So again, this is telling you the same story that the system is fluctuating a lot. We don't know whether it's close to a quantum critical point, but it definitely quantum critically, it definitely fluctuates quantum mechanically very strong. Okay?
Could you give us examples of the local probes?
What do you mean, NMR? First of all, let's use X-ray core-level spectroscopy. You shoot X-ray to the core level and get excited. Because this is a very fast probe, and if you have a magnetic moment in the D channel, then even the P channel, ignore all the, even the S channel thing, will feel the splitting in your spin up and spin down channel. So you're going to see two features in the co-label spectroscopy. They're splitting, and that splitting is actually a measurement of the strength of the exchange field generated by the D-shell. So this is a well-established method in X-ray community, and people use it all the time, especially in chemistry, to identify the size of the local moment, which may or may not order at all. And they found this, all these big numbers. Right? These are all 2 to 3 momentum, 1.3, 2.1. These are all very large, right, compared to the order. And I should also say, from the PDF analysis, the PDF, pair density distribution. Yeah, pair distribution function. Right? You can see the local structure, right, which is the local order parameter of the ferro orbital. Same thing, locally the distortion is very large in the lattice, which implies a ferro orbital order parameter locally is very large. It's about 4 times bigger than the actual order. Okay, locally it's distorted 4 times stronger. Again, same story, local moment very big in the orbital channel as well, but the order part is actually small.
Okay, that's right. So yes. There was some initial effort to describe the advanced energies, the anisotropy that you were mentioning in terms of some biquadratic interactions.
In the spin channel.
In the spin channel.
Yeah.
What do you have to comment on that?
Well, I think that's the wrong way to look at the problem. Okay. If you want to absorb the orbital physics into a spin-only Hamiltonian, then you will have to do that, mm-hmm. right? And actually, in Fernandez, many of the analysis, same thing. If you just forget about orbital, of course you have to absorb all the physics into the spin channel, and you can generate something very large, like large magnetoelastic constant, for example. But that's just a way to hide the real important physics into some parameter, right? If you want to do something like that, you introduce a Hamiltonian with both spin and orbital, then you will find that the orbital is actually play a very active role in this. Okay? Therefore, we have an intrinsic bias in our literature that we like spin, we don't like orbital. So we try to hide it, we try not to look at it. Right? Most of our Hamiltonian, we don't want it. But that's a bias. Reality is that they both are active.
But didn't you just show that you only see the ferro orbital when inside the magnetically ordered state?
What I say is at ground state.
Exactly.
At the ground state, both are ordered.
So do you have a ground state where you have only orbital order and no magnetic order?
You don't have a ground state for either one case.
If you force it to be like that, what is the energy difference?
There is no ground state that you can force. Well,
then it's not going to be ground state. I want to know what is the energy difference between a state that is purely paramagnetic, no orbital order, and purely paramagnetic, but with
there is no such state. It doesn't exist.
You cannot construct.
This is the wrong question to ask.
So when you say that when you say that people like spin more than orbitals, I mean it's because they're together.
No. This is the wrong question to ask. You want to ask this question, you should ask the following. You should ask the question, okay, now I have a system that has strong correlation in both channels. And they're coupled very strongly. Which one can I fluctuate faster, easier, with thermal or with quantum, with doping? That's the question you should ask. Which one can I destroy faster? You don't want to go start from the normal state and ask for instability. You have to go start from the ground state and ask which one I can destroy faster.
I mean, at the DFT level, there is no difference.
Exactly, that's my point.
At the DFT level, it's impossible to answer this kind of question. Yeah. No, this kind of question, this is not the kind of question you should be able to do with DFT, right?
Yeah.
DFT only gives you energy scale, basically.
Can I ask some follow-up to what Jimmy asked you? So Jimmy mentioned that there are some biquadratic terms.
Yeah.
But I thought that you told us that antiferromagnetic correlations on the spin sector are connected with ferromagnetic orbital order.
Right.
In both cases, I don't see why I want a biquadratic term who only serves to penalize orthogonal. I don't get why I need the biquadratic term, just conceptually, why would I need that? Why would I like this term?
Let me give you a simple answer.
It's generated. The fact that it has fluctuations is going to be there.
Right.
If you couple each lattice, my plus couple is going to get a term. So
right.
It's unavoidable.
The short answer is that there is some strange feature in the dispersion. In order to account for them, you need a high order term.
Okay.
It's a mathematical argument, okay? But this strange feature actually can be accounted for if you have orbital flow.
That's what I'm saying. It's not artificial. It appears in your.
Yeah, it's not avoidable. It's not avoidable. Yeah.
Well, right, you should also keep in mind that this Bragg-Wright spin trap is in the context of spin one. And you know, so the quantum object, so it's not really that you favor, you know, solving all
this. Even if it's classical, you get that. Mm-hmm. If that's the Larkin, Colvin, Chandra, they show that you do 1/S, you get this term. So you can, you're always going to get it, as far as I understand.
So I think that in some of this, or almost of this neutron scattering experiment,
mm-hmm.
they find that something like an effective antiparamagnetic J1Y. So do you have an understanding of that?
I have now with this paper I'm going to show you, okay? I have now. Okay. I believe it's entirely wrong. Okay, the fitting is entirely wrong, and I'll explain to you why. Okay.
Which paper is not wrong? We're all on the same page. Could you repeat the question?
When neutron measurement was done, people tried to fit it with the Schrödinger J1, J2 model. You find a strongly anisotropic parameter, J1Y and J1X. J1Y is so strongly theoretically modified, it becomes almost zero. Okay? While J1X is strongly interpolated, still very largely positive. And I believe that's incorrect. It's a problem of the fitting. And I'll explain to you why. Okay? So, now let's look at the problem. We know we have a system with an itinerant electron, and it also has local moment. This is a problem we don't know how to solve. We don't have that in the textbook. So we want to study this. The simplest way to think about is the spin fermion model, where you have local moment coupled interferometrically. You have the itinerant electron that has degeneracy, multiple orbital, and they have a kinetic energy, and they couple through the Hunting coupling. Because this is ferromagnetic, this would behave differently from the Anderson model. Right? You will have a total. This can be called mechanical or could be classical, depending on how you're going to solve it. The physics is the competition between the kinetic and the potential energy.
Physically, are they capital S?
This is local moment.
Right.
This is the moment of the itinerant electron.
Right. But big S is not related to harmonic operators or other. No, they're not. Not in this moment. Then it's not a spin fermion model.
No. This could
it's
be.
It's not like a quantum model, right?
No. This is ferromagnetic. Be very careful.
But I guess the question is, what are the capital S and what small s
in natural energy? Oh, the way there are many people use this model differently. Some people, including us, initially would say, okay, out of this 5D orbital, I choose some of them to be itinerant and some the rest being local. Mm-hmm. That's in some sense similar to the orbital stability margin ratio. But that's not necessary. You can use spin fermion model even from Q-plane, which has only one bank. The idea is that in the one particle Green's function, you have some low energy channel, which will give you fluctuation in the spin and orbital. But those are the part that is captured by the itinerant. But there are always something that is high energy in the one particle Green's function, but low energy in the spin channel, right? This will be local moment. They don't have to be separated by orbitals. They're only separated by energy that's enough in different channels. So that's why we're going to use this in this study, okay?
Your JIJs, which couple of capital spins, do they already include RPQY, or is it going to be taken care of?
Include what?
RPQY.
Of course not, this is local. RPQY will be produced because of this, right?
So do you have any sense of this energy scale for the keys, K's, and J's? So which one has the largest energy scale?
T is of order of maybe 2 eV scale.
So you just use EV? The bare.
Well, I mean, this is a Hamiltonian, so you know these parameters are highly uncontrolled. Right? It's not like we derive them from some first principle.
But you have to.
What you want is to produce the correct Fermi velocity and the Fermi surface, right? So that you know your RPA kind of fluctuation will be reasonable. And for this, you want to be able to produce the whole thing. You want them to produce the right moment in the local and order, and you want them to produce the correct bandwidth, magnetic bandwidth, for example, right? So these are the way, the constraint you have to pick the parameter.
So these type of modes are frequently used in mechanical fermions.
Oh, yeah.
In particular.
Yeah.
Now, the PCs are usually much lower.
Right. And this model actually is used also very much in the maintenance,
yeah.
where you have orbital freedom and local model, right?
Well,
the
difference and
yeah.
Right, the difference is, I have to emphasize, this is ferromagnetic.
It's ferromagnetic.
Yeah, so it's so-called double exchange physics.
So the J is a ferromagnetic field?
No, J is an intermagnetic.
Oh, the condo coupling.
Hand coupling is ferromagnetic.
The condo coupling.
Yes, that's very important.
It's like SD model.
Right, because that changes, of course, the fixed point. Right?
It's
right. So that's why I put the analogy of a magnetite. In the magnetite, this is the same thing. So then you have the intermagnetic coupling between short range. That's potential energy. And you have the typical double exchange argument is that you have small number of dilute carrier, and they move in the system. And when they move, they couple to the local moment. And if they are intermagnetic aligned, then you pay a price in the potential because this one is ferromagnetic, right? So that's like a barrier. That means you can have backward scattering, and then your kinetic energy will suffer. So if your kinetic energy dominate, you will align the local moment. If the local moment dominate, then you're going to have a bad, very bad metal because you're going to scatter like crazy. Right? That's the simple idea. And using this idea, it's very natural to see in the magnetite and also in the ionotype. You see this behavior. You see that the spin tend to align in the one-dimensional sense. Because that's the simplest way you can get the kinetic energy in this direction. And in this direction, you get the potential energy. So it's very general that you get one-dimensional light chain, either in this way or in this way. And or you can get a block. In fact, in this paper, which was published before when the 245 was discovered, where this block magnetic order was discovered, before this was discovered, in our study, we already predicted such state exists. And you find that actually, if you use the DFT parameter to put into this calculation, you find that actually most material are somewhere in the boundary between the C type and E type.
When we connect the analogy of manganites, especially in the manganites, there's a very clear hierarchy of energy scales between crystal field and Bunce coupling.
Yes.
And here, as you said in the very beginning, crystal, all these states are needed.
That's right. That's right.
So
this is not as clean as manganite, for sure.
So, but that's my question. In which grounds can we expect that these Hamiltonian is describing what is happening? Can we try to derive it from a more general?
Very hard. I think it's going to be very hard. So let me make clear, I'm not claiming this Hamiltonian is the right Hamiltonian to study iron planeta. So I wouldn't even attempt to study the pairing structure using this method. I only want to understand a little bit how itinerant electron will modify the magnetic property. That's all I want to do. Okay? So previously we found that this model is able to produce all three kinds of magnetic order, which is very powerful if you think about it, because they have almost identical Fermi surface. Right? And using any localized or purely localized, purely itinerant, very hard to explain this. But with this model, you automatically get those features very easily.
But in DFT,
you have that. Yeah, look, be careful. This kind of physics actually mostly are built into DFT calculation. You can actually see why they should be included in DFT already. We just try to understand it. But I'm not claiming, actually, I think DFT is a very powerful tool that has been underestimated by the community. All three kinds are produced by DFT.
Wait, can you wait? What was the question?
The question is that this aspect is not itinerant, this is not, I mean, you get everything in DFT in the same way. So the same diagram that he has there, you can get from DFT.
All three magnetic structures
come
out of DFT automatically. You don't think, you push a button, it come out. Okay? It come out. And you can also sit in your office, think about itinerant picture,
yeah.
Play with your parameter for like years,
yeah.
You won't get three of them. But that's not good, because we want to understand, right? So the attempt here is to understand what's going on.
So how about the size of the moment?
Very big.
On both sides, both? One, 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 and one, one?
They're all big. They're all very big.
Wait, so your question is fundamental question or theoretical?
No, theoretical question.
So your S corner is
but you should get a small moment.
I mean, but did you should tell us including how to solve the model?
Yeah, I'm gonna do that. Here you just do a simple mean field estimate of the total energy at the moment. But I'm now gonna do something a bit better, okay?
Wait, did you tell us what the Hamiltonian would be, a spin Hamiltonian that gives a bicollinear state?
All of them come from the same Hamiltonian.
Oh, okay.
Okay? It's just that in some cases, this local movement is a little bit bigger, and in some cases local movement is slightly smaller, and in some cases the hand coupling is slightly bigger, some is slightly smaller. That's enough.
You see, so you're saying this bicollinear thing you only get when you have the competition between kinetic energy and spin exchange.
In this model.
Sort of what you're saying, because the collinear one you could easily get by forgetting a
bicollinear
attenuant.
That's right.
So is your statement that you cannot, systematically, you cannot get the bicollinear state without taking into account the attenuant component?
You mean with only local Hamiltonian? Yeah. The bicollinear is kind of hard. I have to think about it, but I don't think it's easy.
Okay.
Because it's degenerate with the block.
Yeah.
It's highly degenerate.
That's right.
It's very hard. That's right. And it's also highly degenerate with many other configurations.
Yeah.
All right. So now this is just the earlier work. And what I want to tell you today is this recent work. This is done by Philip Phillips. He used the same model, this model, tried to explain this very strange spin wave dispersion. What you find is that this is the 0, 0 to pi 0. You find that the antifinity strongly dispersed magna. Then from pi 0 to pi pi, this is the direction where they're supposed to be firmly aligned. And then you see this feature in the J1, J2 model. And then the question is, experimentally, it was found that this part of the magna is actually pretty high energy rather than low energy. Okay? So how do we push this energy higher? They use this idea and say, well, we have a double chain physics. And on top of that, because experimentally has fit this using J1, J2 model, right? And then you find that in order to fit it, you need the J1, J2 being very anisotropic. You need the J1y to be very, very small or even positive or negative compared to J1x. So this is where all this idea of J1x and J1y being very different and a double chain physics is important because that's how you reduce the J1y, because there's a kinetic generated fermionic correlation that suppresses antifinity coupling. So they use the same idea, they want to produce this idea, and of course I talked to the first author and I said, well, why do you do this crazy thing? Because they could find they couldn't do this. They finally published this result after they choose a very small Fermi surface. They choose two electron pockets. Then this is exactly like magna, dilute carrier with a small pocket. Then you generate this physics. But then I said, well, but wait a minute, this is not right, because this is not the Fermi surface we have in Iron Planeta. We have nesting, we have electron and hole pocket. Right? We have to look into that. So that's the question I want to investigate. And in fact, in this paper, Zhenyu Ong's group, they found that when you have a nesting, using a similar Hamiltonian, when you have nesting, you will enhance the susceptibility at pi zero, because both local attenuant subchannel has contribution there. So they conclude that actually only if you incorporate attenuant nature, local movement alone is not quite enough to order at pi zero. So they say that they help each other to produce a more stable pi zero order, which is very intuitive. If you had a guess, that would be my guess. Local movement mode order there, and pi zero of itinerary mode order there, together everybody's happy, order there. Well, surprisingly, that's not true. When we look at this research, when we look at this problem, we found something totally different. So you start with DFT, then you do one year transformation, you get a 10-day Hamiltonian, and then you do a local gauge transformation, which if I have time, I'll cover in the second part of my talk. Then you go to a two-dimensional five-band Hamiltonian, which just to simplify the problem. Then you do a spin rotation, and then you follow that, you integrate out the attenuant carrier the same way that Phillips and collaborator did. Then you find a renormalized linear spin wave Hamiltonian. But from there, we can study both dispersion and also the fluctuation. So that's what we do. The only thing new here is that we use the realistic five-band Hamiltonian, and we incorporate the realistic Fermi surface. So this is what the result we find. As you increase the coupling from small to big, that means you enhance the influence on the ideal electron, you find in the antifermionic direction the strength increase. This is totally different from what Phillips has found. They found this part to be unchanged, and this part to be enhanced. We found the other way. This direction doesn't change much. This direction changes a lot. That means ideal electron is introducing strong antifermionic correlation into the problem.
So are you calculating the effect of the RGBY interaction?
Effectively, when you integrate out the itinerant electron, your linear spin rate has long range coupling, RKKY light coupling already. Okay? More important, we have the right Fermi surface. They don't have, they have two electron parking in the Galois plane.
Okay, yeah.
There is no nesting. So this nest, of course, this means you have a some kind of antiphony wave vector Q, very, very large Q, a very, very small Q, low wavelength. So it's like a fail related, right? Parking is very small, so the Q vector is very small. So yeah, it's like fail related. But here we have a pi zero nesting, so you have a very strong antiphony correlation here. So that's what we find. So we immediately found something totally different from Phillips. And it's interesting to know that then as this happened, so you crank up the influence of the itinerary chart. You enhance the influence of this nested Fermi surface to the local moment. You would have thought that stabilized the pi zero phase better and better. But actually, on the contrary, what you find is that the fluctuation of the local moment start to enhance and start to blow up. And you can easily go beyond 0.5. Half the electron moment is gone. It's fluctuating. Okay? So this is totally surprising to me. And if you look carefully why this happened, it turns out it's because this mineralization of the ideal electron actually is mostly in the J1 channel. Because you have a nesting, right? And if you think about nesting and you think about Fourier transform, you can immediately convince yourself you can generate a huge J1. So the mineralization of the ideal electron is to generate J1, both x and y direction. You see, both become stronger and stronger anti-femininity. There is no J1Y being ferromagnetic or being small, nothing like that. It becomes stronger and stronger. But think about local moment. If you have a J1 very large, larger than 2J2, it's going to be not going to be in the strike time. It's not going to stay in the pi zero, right? It's going to try to go to Neon or some other state. And that's exactly what happened here. Now, it's very important to remind yourself that it's itinerary electron induced mineralization, so it has to be long range. It has to be power law decay. It has to be something like RKKY, right? So that's what happened here. You see, in our result, you find if you do the full calculation of anything that we calculate, the frequency of the magnetum or the parameter of the linear spin wave theory, you find that if you keep only J1, J2 model, you get a very different number, easily different by a factor of 2, or even change sign. So that's telling you there is no way when you have an itinerary electron that has a big enough pocket, the phase space is not small enough for you to ignore. There's no way you have only short range interaction. That's just a fantasy. It's not going to happen. Itinerary electron has a kinetic energy, which always generates long range power law decay coupling. So when you do the measurement, as long as the system is itinerary system, you cannot fit it with a J1, J2 model, period. If you do, you can get crazy fitting. Now, let me get back to the question that you asked. So I already told you why this is happening. Because the long range, the fluctuation is both in the temporal and the spatial channel, right? And in fact, you see that there is a very enhanced fluctuation that looks like some kind of incommensurate feature that experimentally has seen, which we reproduce that as well. And that turned out to be related to the nesting of the order state. So it's not a normal state, this is the order state. Once you go to the order state, you still have fluctuation, remaining fluctuation. Those fluctuations actually produce this incommensurate feature in the local channel, in the local moment channel. Okay? Now, what about failure orbital? Well, one thing that people have misunderstood this model is that they use this model, like Albert de Gerdau, to study, to simulate orbital and spin physics. And they always find that the orbital order follow the magnetic order, right? But that's totally misunderstanding of the model, because the model do not have interaction in the fermion channel. So there is no intrinsic instability in the orbital channel, even though they are degenerate. If they don't interact, they always be stable. In order to have the realistic physics, you need to introduce interaction in the fermion channel. Then you will have intrinsic orbital instability. Then you can say, well, which one is stronger, whatever. So in order to study failure orbital effect, what we did is that we just introduced a failure orbital order parameter by hand, just to see what happened, okay? And what you see is surprisingly, that's exactly what you see experimentally, that this part of the spin wave dispersion enhanced quickly. while you stabilize slightly the fluctuation, but not a very strong effect. But it's very effective to raise the streamer energy. So in here, we now understand there is no double exchange physics. It's always strongly antiferromagnetic. The reason this part gets enhanced in energy is because there is a fatal orbital correlation in the system. This is not the effect of J1Y being zero or being a ferromagnetic. We have a very strongly antiferromagnetic J1Y, but we can still produce this result because we have fatal orbital correlation in the problem. So again, you should not feed your result using J1, J2 model. It cannot be done.
You have about 10 minutes including.
Okay. So. Yeah, I have to finish the final stuff. We don't have to finish everything, okay? And this is evidence. Even when we have a very strongly dispersive mechanism like that, which is found experimentally, you find J1X and J1Y still are very positive, right? Still highly antiferromagnetic. They split, as it should be, because fatal orbital break X and Y symmetry. But nevertheless, they really remain. In fact, if you look at this number, you'll see J1Y is now lower than 2J2. You would have thought, okay, in that case, the system will not stay in the strike phase, right? It will not stay in the C type. It will be unstable. No, it's stable. And the reason is because, one, you have fatal orbital correlation that help you stabilize it through anisotropy in the long-range channel. Now, if I take this long-range channel and I say, well, I don't want it, I want to fit it with short range. I want to fit the result with short range. Then I will get this crazy J1Y being almost zero result. But that's unphysical. It's not physics.
So if you just go back to the spin wave, I just have a question. When the people start first talking about the J1 being almost zero, I thought that it was because if you look at pi-pi,
yes, it's very high.
The experiment was saying that it's not actually a minimum, it's actually
it's like that. Right.
Exactly, and then you get that if you do it J1 equals zero.
Right. If you have only short range coupling,
that's fine. Yeah. My question here is, how does this result compare to experiment? Because there's still a quite distinguishable minimum there, pi-pi.
And also, you can argue that this energy is not quite as high as experiment, right? I understand your question, but my intention was never to compare with quantitative experimental behavior.
But qualitation, is the experiment a minimum or
no. This is can be changed if you just tune your fatal orbital order correlation. You can make this higher So I want to give us a trend, because that trend is going to be robust. Numbers, I highly doubt it myself. I don't even believe these numbers should be compared with experiment. But the trend, the physics we learned, is real.
So one thing is that get the sort of high energy part, like whether pi-pi, but also the low energy part is actually the thermodynamics is very important, because it tells you what's the anisotropy in the K space, in a spectral distribution,
right?
So if you do something like J1, J2, and the bi-quadratic coupling, you can actually capture most high energy and low energy features.
I'm not surprised.
Have you tried to look at that?
What you are saying is that if I want to take this Hamiltonian, which has a long-range coupling, RTKY-like, and I insist I'm going to fold it, I'm going to map it to an effective short-range Hamiltonian that allows higher order, like by quadratic term. Maybe it's possible to approximately map it, right?
So that's more than that. The bi-quadratic coupling affects the high-energy part. Much more than the
noise
happening and all that.
Yes. No, I understand what you say, and I don't think what you say is wrong. Mm-hmm. But what I'm saying is that I'm not so sure we have the right to throw out or to integrate out the low range part without consequence.
That was not my question. Yeah. The question is that maybe the orbital part is important. Right?
No, so there's no doubt.
Can I finish your question?
No, please.
So just following this logic, this is a spin orbital type of combined interacting Hamiltonian. Can you look at the low energy dynamics and the high energy dynamics, and just to see whether these quantitative features, like an isotropy in the K space, so that dispersion of that come out from this
right.
analysis? That's a question.
Right. As I mentioned already briefly, that in fact we see this feature, low energy excitation, that is elongated along the pi 0 to pi pi direction. So if you look around the dynamics around pi 0, you find it's highly anisotropic. And you look like incommensurate, that some people call it incommensurate order. And that's exactly what we find here. Right? I wasn't expecting this, but now I understand why this has to be there.
So I think the experimental stated that the anisotropy is there near pi 0
yeah.
and low energy, but
yes.
the anisotropy is not that large. It seems like you're disputing that.
No. I'm saying that at low energy, you can see very strong anisotropy,
yes.
which look like experiment.
You're making a difference.
Right. At high energy, how do you quantify anisotropy at high energy? Well, you look at the, well, that's it, you look at this feature, right? You look at this feature. You don't really see. So I think, from our result, we find that this pi zero phase become unstable along this line, okay? So from our point of view, it looks like it's nearly impossible to stabilize this phase if you don't seek help from the ferrite orbital correlation. You really, in real material, probably you have different degree of ferrite orbital to help you stabilize. And a way to detect the strength of ferrite orbital would be to detect, for example, these features. See how much this feature, pi pi, for example, is high or low. That's actually a very sensitive probe to this ferrite orbital. And we know from experiment that actually these can change a lot between different material. Right? So it'd be interesting to make a correlation experimentally. How this dispersion correlate with the strength of the structure transition or things like that. And I think that would be a very meaningful thing to do. So I think I'm running out of time, so I'm not going to cover the second part about the symmetry. Suffice to say that I was going to show you that you could use this Gleichen state of symmetry to your advantage and go to the so-called pseudo-Mermitian space. And once you do that, you will find something very strange about the pairing structure. And in particular, you will find that there are a regular pairing in the Cooper pair channel in the pseudo-momentum space will convert to our physical momentum space into three components. One of the components is the regular Q to zero Cooper channel. The other is the same, except that it has a shift by pi pi in the pairing structure for the even orbital character. And if you pair one even, one odd orbital, then that pair, that component, actually will go to the eta pairing channel, will have a finite momentum pi pi. And it has odd form factor. This particular pair, break time reversal symmetry, has all sorts of strange behavior when it's odd and even pair. And that's what I want to say, but I didn't have time. So if you're interested, I can tell you a little more in private. And as a result of that shift, you can actually explain something very interesting from the experiment. This is what I can show you here. So if you have a pairing structure or nodal structure, you will find that it could be very isotropic here for the odd orbital. But for the even orbital, you might see a very anisotropic pairing structure because these two pairing structures are the same except it's shifted by pi pi. Okay? But because of that, you can explain many experimental data. For example, this artist, they found that these pockets are very close to each other near the whole pocket. Very close to each other, but they demonstrate very different anisotropy. Two of them weakly angular dependent, the other one is highly anisotropic. That's actually very easy to explain to fit, for example, with our data, with our formula. And in fact, STS also showed the same thing, that this sheet and this sheet has very different anisotropy. In fact, it's not only different, but they are out of phase. When this inner sheet is bigger, outer sheet is actually smaller. That's very hard if you have a simple pairing structure. But once you understand this one is shifted by pi pi, then this trivially come up. All right, thank you very much. Oh, sorry, one last thing. The eta pairing I mentioned to you, it sounds something very exotic, but we can quantify it because that comes from the wave function, right? How the wave function makes different states. So we can quantify, and what we find is that the regular pairing, the red and green, and for the electron pocket, is roughly the same strength as the eta pairing. So this eta pairing with finite momentum type pi is not a tiny correction. It's half the story. It's comparable to the regular pairing for q to 0. All right, thank you.
So I'm a little bit confused about this eta pairing. I mean, are you actually saying that the three-entity state breaks translational symmetry?
Mm-hmm. But it can also symmetry.
You have a finite
qubit.
For that particular pair.
Well, I don't care. My system breaks.
Is it finite in the one iron per unit cell or two iron per unit cell? I think that's the question.
I always do it with one iron per unit.
So that reflects back to zero in the two iron per unit cell.
In two iron, there is no question.
You don't break translational symmetry.
The reason you're asking that is I didn't get to discuss the pseudo momentum, right? The local gauge transformation.
Okay, so what's
the breaks the point group symmetry?
I'm sorry?
It breaks the point group symmetry.
No.
So what does it break?
It's only inside the unit cell.
So this is actually originally we found this idea from Patrick Dee and Xiaobao Wen's paper. The point is very simple. If you look at this system, you have to have two iron per unit cell, as you said, right? But people like one iron per unit cell because that's the simplest way to do. And if you want to think about it, you'll find that the problem is glycine symmetry involving a PZ, Z direct. So you translate and you flip the Z axis. Then it's a good symmetry, right? If you take this one, you move this one here, you move this one here, then you flip the Z axis. This plus becomes minus. Right? So that's how this is doing. But the problem is that these and this z-axis, translation symmetry in z-axis, they don't come in.
Okay, I don't care about the detail. What symmetry does the state break?
You mean the...
your parents do it, what you call eta pair.
It's not a symmetry you break.
So it doesn't break any symmetry?
No. So let me put it this way. In the one iron cell picture, you already break the symmetry because you have two iron per unit cell.
Okay, but there's no such picture.
No, that's what I'm saying. It's because of that. You have two iron per unit cell, that means from the y iron point of view, the symmetry is broken. That is the original pipe.
Okay, well, let's talk about two iron per unit cell.
No, there is nothing like that.
No symmetry breaking.
Yes, it should be.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So this is part of A1G.
Yes.
Okay.
It's more question than just seeing orbits, right? Yeah. That's the real important question.
Say that again?
Maybe I'm projecting a little bit, but I think what you're trying to tell us is that anything that is naturally viewed in the one iron zone is going to have consequences.
Yes.
Right?
Because the physical momentum they measure, they measure things in physical momentum space, and that momentum space reflects more of a one iron representation than two iron representation. So this is the first part of my talk, but this part of my talk that I didn't get to cover. So for example, this is the measurement. Arbitrary measurement, and this is the calculation. When you unfold the electron structure from two iron zone to one iron zone, you will find that that's exactly what they measure. Because the physical measurement do not distinguish one iron zone from two iron zone. So you're always in the one iron, almost one iron representation.
No, the physical measurement takes the bigger unit zone. That's the unit.
No. The physical measurement uses continuous momentum space.
No, I think it's a question of convention. It's kind of when you choose to use the trigonal unit cell, as if it was the trigonal, so it then depends on how it's
The matrix element of the most experimental probe is directly related to one item per unit cell picture.
Right, so they choose to probe the trigonal with a simpler one.
If you use two item per unit cell, then the matrix element will have additional interference in building, and that's the origin of this feature. But you can think about this from a wider point of view, it's automatic. It's automatic, yeah.
I just want to make a comment first. I think that there are a lot of interesting questions and a lot of misunderstanding that we should try to clear up in our discussion next Wednesday. Because we, I think, at least informally assigned that day to the discussion of symmetries.
Next Wednesday, mean tomorrow or the day after? No, next week?
The following week.
I'm not here anymore. I wanted to, but I was only given 2 weeks, so.
On Monday, but only when we made the decision. Okay, we're stuck with that. Still, we can have a discussion about symmetries, and we'll let you know what we decide.
Okay, thank you.
I have a question about
this. Yes.
Was that next one in my question? Yeah, so you made a comment which I wanted to understand a little bit better, which was that you referred to the work of Evolco's group
mm-hmm.
and Moret's
group. Yeah,
about where they decided based on a spin analysis of the spin paramount model that it will appear to be an unbiased treatment of spin orbital degrees of freedom,
mm-hmm.
that the spin physics was driving the orbital physics. And you said that wasn't to be taken seriously because
that was totally artificial.
No fermionic interactions in the model.
Right.
Can you elaborate on that again?
Okay. That's totally artificial because if you look at Hamiltonian, you immediately realize there is no way this Hamiltonian, the ideal electron itself, would have any instability, right? Think about this. If I don't have this local moment, I don't come to the local moment, I have ideal electron itself. If you don't take a Hamiltonian, there is no orbital instability, period.
So is this Hamiltonian they used just a
graviton? Yeah.
I think they had a...
With classical spin.
Yeah.
Yeah, they use classical spin to do simulation.
But you can ask in a different model, for example, in a five orbital Hubbard model, ask, then it's unbiased at least in some level. You can ask if in field of Monte Carlo or different techniques where you're gonna find this data.
You can ask that question, but I have a problem with that approach. Let me explain to you.
So which approach do you
first, if you start with a Hubbard model to find it. One of the problems is that you have to do approximation. You cannot handle that. And when you do approximation, you kind of pick the fixed point you want to go to already. Now,
not necessarily.
You can, look, if you have a method that doesn't allow localization, five-band Hubbard model will never give you this physics. That's the whole point of using this model. In order to realize this kind of physics, you need to have a certain degree of localization that behave like a local moment channel.
You okay, need to have an example where you have this, for example, in order to select a mode transition in a multi-orbital mode, you can exactly get...
Right, if you do dimensional mean field thing, you can realize somehow. Right.
Not necessarily, but that's one way.
That's the only way we know.
There are other ways.
What other way?
Well,
I don't know.
The point is that, of course, we want to start with first thing
on the point and solve everything, then we know everything. But that's just not possible to do in general.
I mean, the good point is that even with constant geometry, it's very hard to simulate the symmetry for physics. It's very hard to have, for example, from CDFT, for example, to my post of dynamicity and numericity, just because of data. You have to figure out how you break the symmetry.
It's just a matter of the size of radius.
No, it's more than that. This system has a low range fluctuation, which means if you look at a correlation function, it is larger short distance and slowly becomes smaller and smaller at long distance. This is not a mean field, this is not a typical mean field behavior. So if you want to attack a problem using mean field, even if it's dynamical mean field, you're going to get something completely different in picture. For example, they found the moment being small, all the moment being small, while the local moment is big. And they conclude this because there's a temporal fluctuation. Of course they conclude there is temporal fluctuation. In their theory, the only thing that can fluctuate is temporal. There is no spatial fluctuation period. So of course they conclude temporal fluctuation. But that's not physics. Physics cannot fluctuate only in time. It has to fluctuate both time and space.
I think we should sort of prolong that discussion. But I think the point you're saying is that you're agreeing with the fact that it's hard to solve the problem that we have simplified.
That's not my idea. Most people adopt this idea before dynamic mean field theory comes along, right? I don't know if that's good or bad, but this is the typical method you use for that.
Not good
anymore. We're all doing our best, but
I know. That's
the technical idea. Understanding where the terms of nanomedia come from some original.
Right.
I won't say evolution,
but
some
kind
that's
what we love to do. But if we can do that, we only follow the Weinberg problem, right? It's very hard to do a real RC without the order derivation, the order approximation. And if you want to go to a fixed point that is not a theoretically related to a mean field line behavior, it's very hard. It's very hard. I want to do that, but if we can figure out how to do it. So at the moment, I think this kind of model captures some physics. And we learned something interesting. The idea is from behaving differently, or its purpose changes when they are in the presence of the local moment. The next thing has totally different effect. I think that's very, very surprising to me.
Okay.
And they're not classical.